It's time for Wisconsin Life. When many people think of food rationing, they think of World War II. But Americans were first urged to conserve during the First World War, and many of the programs were pioneered in Wisconsin. Historian Erica Janik tells us how Wisconsinites learned to cut back on wheat, meat, fat, and sugar.
Meatless Monday isn't a new idea, nor is eating less wheat. During World War I, Americans cut down on meat, wheat, fat, and sugar. We patriotically filled our plates with dogfish, sugarless candy, whale meat, and horse steaks. We planted victory gardens and learned to love leftovers. President Wilson even grazed sheep on the White House lawn. Everyone was urged to do their part. The food crisis was severe. People in Europe starved as farm fields became battlefields. By the time the U.S. entered the war in 1917, 3 years of fighting had seriously damaged food supplies. So the addition of hundreds of thousands of U.S. soldiers presented a huge problem. As a farming state, Wisconsin took a keen interest in the food crisis. If anyone could help, it was us. Just 6 days after Wilson declared war on Germany, Magnus Swenson, chair of Wisconsin State Council of Defense, began promoting food conservation. He was very qualified for the job. Swenson had spent his career developing methods to make industries more efficient. Swenson first tackled food waste. He reduced fire hazards at grain elevators, warehouses, and other places where food was stored. He urged taverns to stop serving the traditional free lunch and commissioned scientists to study the health benefits of stale bread. So many farmers went to war that more hands were needed in the fields. Automobile squadrons brought older men and teenagers out to farms to harvest crops. So they wouldn't be a burden to farm families, they carried their own lunches. Women joined the war effort without ever leaving the kitchen. Meatless and wheatless days were the centerpiece of Swenson's food plan. Soon, the whole country joined in. Women learned to use corn and rye instead of wheat, chicken instead of beef, and to cook more vegetables. They signed pledges promising to conserve. The Women Students War Work Council and the UW Home Economics Department produced a wartime recipe booklet to show how easy it could be to cook with alternative ingredients. Recipes included steamed barley pudding, scalloped cheese, and something called salmon box, a loaf pan lined with rice and filled with cold, flaked salmon. Meatless and wheatless didn't just apply to home-cooked meals. Restaurants were also encouraged to adopt conservation menus. While meatless and wheatless days may have involved some form of sacrifice, it wasn't all that bad. Meatless meant no beef or pork. Chicken and fish were okay. In fact, Americans were urged to raise their own backyard poultry flocks. A meatless menu offered on the Chicago, Milwaukee, and St. Paul Railroad included a half a chicken and shredded crab on toast. More than a month after Swenson implemented his conservation measures in Wisconsin, Herbert Hoover was named the Federal Food Administrator. The Wisconsin plan soon became a national priority. When the fighting finally ended in late 1918, Americans had shipped nearly 10 billion pounds of meats, fats, dairy products, and vegetable oil overseas. Wisconsin increased its food production by 25% while sending 50,000 farmers to war. Food will win the war, the government said. It was Wisconsin that provided the answer.
Wisconsin in the First World War, a special Wisconsin Life series, continues all this month.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Catch more Wisconsin Life on Wisconsin Public Television Monday nights at 8:30.
Here to talk more about the food rationing campaign of World War I is Wisconsin Life producer Erica Janik. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start out with a real basic question, which is, you know, why don't we know more about food rationing and conservation in World War I? World War II gets a lot of attention, you know, and maybe it's just because it's so much closer in our memory, but it seems odd to me that 100 years ago this happened and it was a big deal and now we've forgotten all about it.
Well, I definitely think that proximity in time does have something to do with it. I think we just don't know as much about World War I as we know about World War II because, you know, we're not living amongst people who lived through World War I anymore. And so I think World War II is just more present in our minds. I think a difference, too, is that in World War I, a lot of these programs were voluntary and things were more enforced and mandatory during World War II. So they came up with these ideas of how they were going to do all of these food conservation programs. But it's really in World War II where everyone was kind of forced to do it. And so maybe being forced rather than being coerced through colorful propaganda posters makes it stick in your head a little bit more.
So tell me more about the role of Wisconsin and this person named Magnus Swenson, which is a terrific name, but I've never heard of this person before. And what did he do, and why did he become so important in this effort?
So Magnus Swenson was actually a Norwegian immigrant who had moved to Wisconsin, and he became really involved in the sugar refining industry. And one of the things that he was doing in that industry was really trying to cut down on waste and make industry more efficient. And so when the U.S. enters the war, Wisconsin was the first state actually to form these state councils of defense, and Magnus Swenson was named the chair of this committee. And before any kind of federal kind of organization could really get together, Magnus started just doing what he knew best, trying to make the state more efficient. These state councils of defense were extremely organized. There were county-level committees, there were town-level, really all different levels of groups working toward some kind of conservation measures. And the council's goal was really just education about what people could do for the war. And so he was really doing everything he could to teach people about what they could do to actually support the war effort, because people did want to get involved and they weren't quite sure how to do it. And so Magnus really came up with these kind of innovative programs to save meat and wheat and fat, sugar, things that were high in calories that we needed to send overseas.
And it's interesting, too, because the war had been going on for such a long time before America got involved. But it sounds like, in Wisconsin at least, that the public was ready to respond to these pleas. That they, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, yeah, well, whatever. But here it sounds like they just sort of stepped right up.
They did. You know, I think it's really kind of amazing when you look at it in retrospect. The Europeans had really been relying on the American Midwest to supply food during the war up until this point. And, you know, we had been reading for years about people in Europe that were starving. And so it wasn't really unknown, I think, to Wisconsinites. And so when the U.S. enters the war, you know, we're sending hundreds of thousands of soldiers overseas who also are going to need a tremendous quantity of food. And so we were really kind of prepared to step up our production, and people really did, you know, believed in this cause and wanted to do what they could to support it.
And at the same time, there were other organizations too. So, for example, the University of Wisconsin played a role. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the University of Wisconsin played a very key role. Magnus Swenson actually worked with the College of Agriculture to help farmers really try to increase their yield. The university put out pamphlets about what the most productive seeds were so that people would know, you know, these are the ones to plant. This is the way to go. They also sent out county extension agents who would visit with farmers and try to figure out, you know, how to reduce their waste. They were really trying to encourage farmers to put up a silo. Silos, also a Wisconsin invention, but this would really help cut down on waste of corn and grain. And they were also doing things through the home economics department. You know, they wanted people to change really the way that they were cooking, and people had no idea how to do that. And so the home economics department produced all of these recipe booklets to help people use alternative ingredients, you know, using things like cornmeal instead of wheat. So you find all kinds of recipe booklets that they're putting out, as well as classes that they're having. Extension agents would also travel to small towns in Wisconsin and teach classes for women on how to can and preserve, just so they could figure out how to actually make this work in their lives.
So kind of a three-pronged approach. They wanted to cut down on waste. They wanted farmers to learn how to be more efficient and so forth. And then they took a direct sort of shot at the home, and they wanted people to have gardens, to have chickens, can, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, all the things that, you know, people are still doing to this day, mm-hmm. The things that sound so new, you know.
And trendy.
Right,
and
exactly.
Hipster, yeah.
Backyard chickens, that's so new and interesting. But, you know, you find out that we've actually been encouraging people to do this for a century.
So how did they get the word out? We've heard about Magnus Swenson, but was this, like in World War II, I know there was lots of slogans and so forth. Did we see the same thing in World War I?
Absolutely. You find a very coordinated propaganda campaign with all kinds of slogans. The most popular one related to food was probably "Food will win the war." You found that all over the place. But you also found things like "The seeds of victory ensure the fruits of peace." And "Food is a weapon. Don't waste it." There are also all kinds of window displays that lots of these local councils of defense, they would, you know, go to the local grocery store and put together some kind of elaborate display of, you know, vegetables holding hands. And sometimes they even did kind of macabre things. There's some women, I can't quite remember what town it was in Wisconsin, but they actually put a skeleton in their window to, you know, really get the point across that if you didn't save food, like, people were going to die. But they also had kind of fun and a little bit corny slogans like, "Old King Corn is American born, a mighty fine food is he. He makes good bread or cakes instead, so we don't need wheat, you see." So kind of clever advertising through posters in these campaigns.
Yeah, hard to know how that would play in 2014 or 2017, but in 1917, it was really something. So we've only got about 30 seconds left, so lots of good lessons here. We don't want to waste. We want to be able to grow our own food. So after the war, nobody wasted any food. Everybody continued to grow chickens and all of that, or we just went back to...
We did kind of go back to the way we were doing it before. The food crisis kind of continued in Europe after the war. There were still major food shortages. And actually, Magnus Svensson ended up going to Europe to help kind of teach some of those efficiency lessons in Europe that he had taught here in the U.S.
All right. Well, Erica, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Erica Janik, producer and editor of Wisconsin Life.